Hi, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we're going to dial your D&D characters up to 11. Or maybe down to one, because growing and shrinking characters in different spaces can present them with unique excitement and challenges. What's the best way to handle it? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we expand into today's conversation, I will remind everyone that, as always, at the end of the show, we'll be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host on our Discord server that you can join in by becoming a patron. Visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our private Discord. Get your account all set up over there over the course of the show, and maybe about 10 or 15 minutes after the show is over, we will be on there to chat with you all live.
We love that, and you can join us at the end of this hour. We would love engaging with your thoughts about this issue in person. You know, Paul, you picked this topic, and I've been trying to express how much this has sent me down a rabbit hole of, yeah. I did not realize how much I use this theme in my adventures, and I was trying to find one particular adventure on my hard drive here, and I was like, oh, well, this isn't what I thought, but I shrank the characters in this adventure. And then, well, this adventure isn't what I thought, but I used giant mummies. I was giantifying some monsters that don't normally do that. So it seems like it's really a through line that I would forget about, but it's a common through line through a lot of D&D stuff at the very inception. And of course, you know, I was thinking, like, what are some literary traditions of this? And I thought of, you know, Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, all the way back in 1865. The very first thing that happens to Alice is she gets thrown into a foreign world down a rabbit hole, like, which I sympathize with today. And then there's a door that's too small for her, and there's a drink me potion that makes her small, but then she's left the key way up on the table. It's too high. And now there's the eat me cake that makes her grow. And she has to balance that out in order to get through. Part of that, Alice is like wondering, oh, should I drink this potion? Cause it might be poison. Someone might be trying to trick me into drinking poison is actually part of it. And boy, does that not feel like D&D. And allow me to point something out here today. If you look at original D&D on the potions list, if I can get this in camera, that's the first two potions. The first two potions in D&D are growth and diminution. And maybe that's what incited the whole idea of potions in D&D, because that's the first two things that they want to present there is basically Alice is growing smaller and bigger. And the other potions came after that.
Geez, Dan, when you were talking about the literary background, I was expecting a totally different direction because my brain goes all the way back to 1726 to Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift, where he goes and visits lands full of tiny people and giant people.
Good point. I hadn't thought about that. Really good point on that.
It's clearly been in our collective conscience for quite a while.
Very much so. I'll even point out at the outset here. I don't know if you want to pull up the. I had a couple images. I don't know if I inform you about that. But if you pull up the image of the module cover with the there's the potion list there, the yellow so Rob Kuntz has this adventure called the Original Bottle City. Which he originally ran for Gary Gygax and company because he was the co-DM in Greyhawk. The year of our Lord, the same year that OD&D was published in 1974, Rob Kuntz was running people through a shrunken adventure thing that he calls the Bottle City. He's republished that a number of times over the years. So this was very much on their minds at the outset when D&D was being published.
Yep. All right, so here we go. Mysterious JGM says in chat, "Come on, how about Jack and the Beanstalk?" Yeah, you can. We can take this back, and you can go back and look at our episode on giants, which was like,
yeah.
There was something in there, I think, about them being like the original D&D monster, right? It was like before there were dragons, there were giants.
We just had an episode about our favorite adventures, and I said the Giants adventures, the G1-3 adventures, are A, the first things that TSR published, and B, my favorite adventures for exactly these reasons.
Okay, well let me share with why all this is on my mind, and we can start to dig into some of the because I had the same experience, right? The more I thought about this, I was like, geez, I did that in this adventure. Oh, and that also happens in that adventure, and it's also present in the game in this way. This began because just yesterday I received the Kickstarter fulfillment of Direct Sun's latest work, A Familiar Tower. Nice. A lovely little book here. Definitely recommend it. It's good. It's great stuff, as most of Direct Sun's work is. I'm going to try not to like spoil any of this adventure for you, but I'll just say that there are elements in the game of shrinking and growing. And there's one specific mechanic in here about shrinking and growing that I will share later. But suffice it to say, he's dealing with massive change, right? Like a 50x shrink or growth in the game. And I was thinking about that, and then thinking about like other cases where it's come up for me. And very, very recently, in my very last session of quest that I ran, the players came across an enchanted lantern that secretly had a fairy or a pixie trapped inside it. And they got magically transported into the lantern, which in the interior looks like a little bedroom. And so they meet this winged woman who they assume is normal size, not realizing that they've been shrunk down to be, inside the lantern.
Yeah.
Right. They figure out a way to like break the magic of the whole thing, and they all get flung out. And there they are, and looking around for the winged woman they were just talking to, and she's fluttering around, barely 6 inches tall. And they have this wonderful role play moment where I'm playing this fairy. She's going like, "You're giants, ah!"
That's great.
It's delightful.
That's great.
So it, so from there, I was just thinking about like the various magics we see, the potions you're mentioning. My brain immediately goes to the old enlarge spell, which I don't think made the cut onto your book of spells.
Well, it's not an original D&D. That's actually something that they added. So original D&D has these potions that'll grow and shrink you, but they don't have any spells that the players use to make that happen. And, a common content thing is take a magic item and turn it into a spell if it's of interest. So the first time that enlarge and reduce show up is in advanced D&D, so it's not the game system that I'm basing stuff on.
It's
kind of a weird spell.
It's a very weird spell, and so I started digging it up because I remember using it a bunch, right? Especially in like our third edition days, I remember it coming out a lot. Yeah. And the thing that threw me when I first saw a book of spells is the strength spell, because I was just like, "Oh, is this a thing?" Okay, I don't really remember the provenance of the strength spell, and of course I found it right in my player's handbook, and it's a second level wizard spell. I'm like, okay, it exists. But that's just so interesting, right? Because both ultimately are spells that I'm using to enhance the physical attributes of an ally, right? Or myself. I'm going to make myself much stronger. But one is direct, right? Just boom, strength spell, add this many points to your strength score. And the other is much more vague because enlarge makes you bigger. Well, what does that mean? What are the mechanics of becoming bigger? Right?
Right.
And the enlarge spell, there's never really very straightforward, right? Especially in first edition, it's just like, you get bigger, and like if you grow up to 3 times your size, and if you're at like, it says, I think there's a note in here about like, oh, if you're around 12 feet tall, you've got the equivalent power of an ogre, and if you're around 18 foot tall, you're essentially a giant.
Right.
Well, what the hell's that mean?
Right, you're gonna look. You gotta. Right. Good luck finding where that is in the other books, kids.
Right. I mean, I struggle with this even just in OD&D. I've got a character running around with a girdle of giant strength, and I go, Well, what does that do exactly? It should make them stronger, I guess.
Varies by addition by quite a bit. The other thing I'll say about the first, the advanced enlarge spell is it's a first level magic user spell. And at least to begin with, it's an almost negligible adjustment. Is at first level, you can change somebody's height by 20%. So if I'm 6 foot tall, you can, what is that? Add another foot, I guess, if I've got that right. So I'm like, what is that going to do? And you, once you get to 10th level, then you can increase somebody by 200% or triple, like you said. But it's a really weird spell. And then you almost don't want to know what my margin note is here for the reversal, because it says, well, the primary thing that the reduce spell does is that it undoes the equivalent in large. Well, what does that mean? Okay, so where is it here? Where is enlarge? here it is. I'm sorry, here it is. Okay, so there's the formula that I worked out indicate.
Like, why are you showing us this text, Dan?
What the reduce must be?
And written it in pencil.
Because it's
the math.
Because it's really surprisingly complicated. What the reduce would be if it's inverting you, and the best that you can do would be to reduce somebody by 2/3, which would reduce them to.
It is super, honestly, the language is super weird, right? You got to stare at it a minute because it talks about how it's 20%. You grow by 20% per level up to a maximum growth of 200%. And then you have to convince your brain that doesn't mean 2x bigger. That's 3x bigger.
Yes, but, right.
Why would they write it this way?
And then it's different for objects, and it's different for creatures versus objects. Objects, you only increase them half as much as creatures. Why was that?
It's very strange. But I would say I would expect, right, when we're talking about growth and shrinking, right, unless it's universal, right, and I see this trick happen in a lot of modules. Everybody's been shrunk down to the size of a mouse, and now they have to fight things like weasels and such. We're just going to use standard, all of your stats just remain the same, because relative to the things you're fighting, you're the same, right?
Right.
But when it's just an individual like this, I think you need something better, right? You need something better than that. And I don't know what it is I expect, but I certainly, like, if someone shrinks down to the size of an ant, I would anticipate I could just step on them and kill them, right?
That's a great question. I want to, so I have a list of, like, problematic questions about enlargement, and this is one of them, is if something gets smaller, are they squashable, frankly? And I feel like my instinct wants to say yes, but the advanced D&D polymorph spell has a little clause that rejects that says if you polymorph a brontosaurus down to the size of an ant, you can't still just squash it. It's still just as strong as it was when it was a brontosaurus, thereby preventing you from stepping on it. And I'm like, that seems like that's going to get problematic really fast.
It seems really odd, right? And even the enlarge spell has some notes on stuff like this, right? Where it says things like a magic plus one sword is still plus one, a wand that becomes staff size doesn't increase its magic. Okay, all those seem normal. And then we get to a giant sized potion merely requires a greater fluid intake to make his magical effects operate. Oh my god, I have to, like, I gotta chug this entire freaking quantity of liquid? Yeah, but I get it. It makes this problematic thing of, like, well, okay, if I enlarge a potion, did I just create, infinite potions? Because, then I can pour it all out into smaller bottles, and then I just pour it.
Right.
Aha! I've become the ultimate potion factory.
Right. You can see that. I mean, that's a pretty large blob of text there in Advanced D&D for this first level spell. And you can see that they roll it in somebody's game, and the players were immediately trying to break it in every which way. And they're trying to, and then the DM is trying to manage that on the other end. And I'm like, was this such a good idea? Specifically, was the expanding like 10% per level? Was that a great idea? Maybe this should have been a higher level spell that just like doubles somebody's height or something like that.
It's convenient. I think it's very convenient that you're able to look at the Book of Spells and say, like, well, strength exists in OD&D and enlarge didn't. Because I kind of look at them as kind of serving similar purposes, but the strength spell is very obvious and just straightforward. And the enlarge spell is just full of these weird cases that are just game-breaking. But that said, more fun. I feel like I kind of want the enlarge spell back because it's just so weird. Or at least I want growth and diminution potions, right? It's not like you haven't you haven't really eliminated the edge case. You just pushed it further to the edge, right? Because
I see what you're saying.
Does magic still exist?
Respect that. I respect that.
Let me give you a couple other cases of things people have done to address this, and we can kind of figure out. So this is the one thing I want to call out from a familiar tower. There's a note here in the creature section that says, to enlarge creatures relative to the party, add 6 hit dice. Shrunken creatures all have half hit die. Now, again, remember, he's going back for 50, right? So he's saying, like, a shrunken creature is this big, so half hit die the end, right?
You notice that, and look, I have spent a lot of time. I keep coming back to this issue, and I think I've said on my blog more than once, like, I spend a lot of time on scaling issues. time, distance, speed, height, weight, things like that. And so I refreshed myself on exactly how many times I've come back to this issue. And, you know, it's always a little prickly because no matter what you do, you wind up, you know, observing the fact that at the outset for D&D, they didn't think about this, right? They didn't engineer things in the first place to be consistent with any kind of physical or really even fantasy literature system. So you notice that what Direct Sun has to do there is that he's adding hit dice to go up and he's multiplying hit dice to go down. And I see why you get painted into that corner, actually, because it's like, it's the same problem of like enlarge being different math than reduce.
Intrinsically, D&D already has this problem, right? Because a human could be anywhere from like 1 hit dice to 12 hit dice, right? And their size has not proportionately changed, but if we just go by Monster Manual, you're still going to find plenty of things that are roughly human size that have a wide variety of hit dice.
Yes,
but for example, if I go look up the pixie has like 4 hit points or something, tiny, right? It's despite it being kind of a nasty and interesting thing, creature. They're still like, it's tiny. It doesn't have much. I could easily see an argument to say, like, a pixie should be, I don't know, a couple hit die, right? 1, 2, 3, even?
Oh, I wouldn't, I would push back. I reminded myself this morning that I've published an article on this issue. So back in 2010, I don't know if you want to pull up the image that I have for that. Like, and frankly, I wouldn't remember this until you set up this topic, Paul. So in Fight On magazine, which is an OSR magazine that was coming out at the time, 2010, issue number 8, I published an article called Super Size Me that tries to do some proper math, tries to be inspired by some physical math for original D&D, mostly the humanoids. And, you know, your goblins, kobolds, ogres, trolls, giants type things. And, you know, I have found that there's some reasonable consistency if you kind of just stick to the original D&D humanoid type monsters. They're not the most insane things in the universe. And just for if you are trying to deal with real life math, the material strength of a substance is based on the square of its height. Like the cross section of your muscles, really the area of a cross section of your muscles dictates how strong or how much weight you can bear. And you know, the hit dice in OD&D does actually kind of follow the square root of your height, actually. So that's actually not totally completely nuts. The damage of these monsters tends to be linear with their height. But I got to admit, if you threw a pixie at me with my analysis, I would, you know, I could actually accept like a third of a hit die, maybe a half of a hit die. And the way that I've got it figured out, you know, kobolds, they're 4 feet tall, half a hit dice is reasonable, but I would kind of resist having large numbers of hit dice for really, really small creatures. And that's one of the main margin notes that I have in my OD&D book, is that if you're looking at hit dice, take the square root of your hit dice times 5, that's probably your approximate height. And that's kind of consistent for all the humanoids and giants.
Interesting. Yeah. Would you extrapolate that then to say that if a player character drinks a potion of diminution, they now only have one hit die or less?
What a great question. What a great question. Right? Let's leave that for the after chat. I'm going to think about that for about an hour, and I'm going to come up with a response. And maybe you can share some spoilers for Familiar Tower, but we'll leave that for the after chat because I don't want to do it here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, like, you know, in the general rule here in the creatures section of Familiar Tower says shrunken creatures all have half hit die. The end. Yeah. They have half hit die.
Yeah.
Here's another interesting, as I was hunting for examples of this, Dan, I'll throw one more at you just because it amused me. And I ended up doing more research on this than I thought I would. Here's a module written by the late, great Tim Kask called All Is Not Well in Boscadel.
Okay.
Fascinating thing about this adventure. You'll notice that my copy here says proof in the corner. This was actually given to me by Tim himself in 2011 at Gen Con. He inscribed it for me and gave me a +1 in perpetuity.
Damn it!
You know, I always assumed that meant only in Tim's games, but now I feel like maybe I should just bring that out at every opportunity I possibly can. So, well, Tim Kask said, I personally have +1 in perpetuity. I can't find any evidence that this thing ever got published. That's the weirdest part for me. I can't find it anywhere. So if anyone has any information about this thing, I'd love to hear it. It says Celtic Studios, Tim Kask, 2011. It was written for the North Texas RPG Con in June of 2011. It's as far as a proof goes, like it's well written and got art and it's clearly ready to go. I just can't find it. So I'm going to spoil it for you all for this rare, not to be found adventure written by Tim Kask. You get turned into mice. You get turned into tiny anthropomorphic mice. That's the adventure.
Okay.
And so then he starts in the beginning, he talks a little bit about hit points and hit dice and weapons. And he basically says that, you know what? An angry weasel compared to a mouse is just as dangerous as a, you know, dragon to a person. I'm just going to hand wave the whole thing, right? You normal hit dice, normal everything, right? It's just, I'm not going to bother with it because you're not going to face normal monsters. You're going to face stuff that would be a monster to a mouse.
Yeah.
Right? Which is clever and interesting, sure. Except at the end, he talks about, here's a little few special benefits to being a mouse. They can climb effortlessly up walls as easily as humans walk across a floor. Okay. They can chew their way through just about anything. And then they're hard to surprise and catch. And he includes, by the way, there are pre-generated character sheets in the back.
Yep.
And he makes this one last note, which he says, every NPC, mouse player character, has a constitution of 18. Mice are tough for their size, resilient, and limber.
Okay.
Every one of NPCs has constitution 18.
I know that you've had pet rats in the past, Paul, and I've played with them. Did Tim have pet mice or rats? Because this feels like a Mary Sue situation, or this feels like a Mousy Sue situation.
Okay, I played in a few of Tim's games of this era. His characters definitely do have pretty high stats. There's a lot of 17s and 18s to be had in his character sheets. But I just found that super curious about that. Just general, you know what? I'm giving them all Constitution 18. The end.
Wow.
And that almost sounds to me, knowing Tim, is probably less about having them as pets so much as having them as, vermin in his garage or cellar or something, right? Knowing Tim, more born of like freaking mice. I've been trying to get rid of them for forever, and they're still in my barn. How do I get rid of them?
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. That's so funny. But I'll say I do like if the whole party and a number of adventures do this, I've done this. I ran an adventure for you and friends, I think 4 years ago now, that I called Get Shorty. If the whole party is shrunk down, it is just so elegant to say a normal rat now functions like a giant rat, and a normal snake counts like a giant snake for our statistics. And it's just so elegant to treat everything on that same basis. And I guess I have to say, I guess to be consistent, then I guess I do have to reduce. I guess if someone shrinks and nobody else does, I do have to reduce their hit points to be consistent with that.
The problem with it I have is that I then invariably want to have an encounter of we're scurrying across the kitchen floor and the housekeeper comes at us with a broom. Because that's just a delightful encounter to have. Okay, well, how many hit dice then does the housekeeper have?
You
have
to this I can answer.
The normal human hit dice?
I can answer.
You're just making them a giant?
So this I did deal with in my Get Shorty adventure. And you probably don't remember, but because one point of critique at the end was that I didn't tell you this was going to happen in the adventure a prologue. So you were actually sent to go kill a berserk hobbit wizard is what your mission was. And you go in, you get hit by a paralyzing trap. And then the hobbit wizard, you'll see my true power, casts a spell. And it looks like he's growing into a giant. And then at second thought, you realize that you have all been shrunk down and he's about to squash you. So I had to deal with exactly this creatures of different sizes issue. Mm-hmm. And at least in that adventure, so you are going down to, you go down to 6 inches, like the potion of diminution for what it's worth. Normal animals now use all the giant stats. And if you do the math there, humans now look like triple storm giants. So if you've tried to fight my hobbit wizard, he's effectively got 50 hit dice, and slapping you with a dagger or a club is going to do 12d6 damage.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, that seems reasonable to me. Fascinating.
Uh-huh. And at another point, you might not think about
outlier.
I had a note to all spells, right? Spell ranges and areas shrink to match you. Right, magically. Yep. I might have overlooked that, right, if I hadn't done that. And then, you know, you get thrown into an area where, where again, I like with Tim, anthropic rats have equipped their city with stolen stuff. So they've got matches for torches, and they've got needles for swords, and they've got, right, thread spools for tables and all this kind of stuff.
Sure. It's adorable. Yeah, of course. Of course you want all that stuff, right? Of course you do. It's just so interesting to me. I mean, especially because like it makes sense, and it's an easy hand wave to do when that's the entire thrust of the adventure. Right?
Yes.
Harder when you're trying to make something generic, like how do I handle a potion of diminution? Right? Because then I'm like, do I scale everything? Like, but it sounds like we do want damage and hit points to be related to physical size.
Yeah. They should be.
And of course, you know, leveling throws a giant monkey wrench in that whole thing.
It does. That's the toughest part of the D&D system, actually, is the and again, if I look at like my recent Star Frontiers game, you know, people maybe they start off with 50 health points and the maximum the game allows is 100. So you scale like, you know, at most times 2, which is, you know, which actual real people, I will definitely run into someone who's twice as strong as me if I go to the gym, right? That's actually a thing that happens, and you can kind of dial in environmental factors to handle that. But yeah, the fact that the D&D system does scale your PCs to like times 10 or 20 by the time you're done is actually hard to handle.
I mean, even just double and half size, we get this for free immediately at level 1. Mm-hmm. We have halflings.
Yeah.
Why do halflings not have fewer hit dice than humans?
You know, this is a thing that I grappled with in my OED house rules, is there was a time in the past where I applied a strength, like a minus something strength modifier to your halfling characters, and also slower movement. And I tried that for a while. You know, AD&D has kind of small ability modifiers in the same way. Mm-hmm. And I wound up abandoning it. And it felt lousy. It felt complicated. I kept forgetting about it. And, you know, particularly like the movement type stuff. And so I wound up taking, anytime there's a rule I'm trying to use and I keep just forget about it, that's usually a flag to me that I need to remove it. So I have removed it from OED, and I'm like, if you want to, you know, and one of our good friends did this, if you want to roll up a Hobbit character with, you know, the strongest Hobbit character that the world has ever seen, that's, I guess, who you're playing. The one thing I do is that, and again, this is something that AD&D also does, is I do prohibit Hobbits from using some of the larger weapon types. So a Hobbit can't use a pike, can't use a longbow, and if they take a normal sword, they're using it two-handed. So I do that, but you know, the stats are all the same, right? So I don't have to monkey with numbers. I just say your longbow isn't on your character sheet. Don't worry about it. And that has been efficient enough that that's been elegant enough that it hasn't been a problem to use that.
Yeah, that's something I think we've discussed before that I've played with as well, toyed with the idea of, but never really fully implemented of. Because I kind of want to do it to dwarves as well, of saying that, like, well, you know, and it all comes from me, the weird note in BXD&D telling me that battle axes are two-handed. I'm like, well, why? And, oh, okay, it makes sense if I say that, you know, for smaller folks, right?
Like, dwarves are limited in advanced D&D, and for me, I don't mind ignoring that. Like, I actually don't mind saying dwarves are thick-set, they're stout, they have leverage, and as a result, they can use whatever they want. So it's actually not something that I restrict in OED.
So you're still letting them use pole arms. That's interesting.
I do. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Everything.
Yep. And then, okay. So here's the other side of this conversation that I wanted to have, which I think is really interesting, which is just as DM dealing with cases where someone has shrunk or grown, mm-hmm. or dealing with players exploring spaces that were built for someone of a different size than they are.
Yeah.
And I often find I struggle with that, to really impart what that feels like to anyone, because it's a little weird, right? It seems like something that should be in our consciousness, but I notice this just in my day-to-day. In my day-to-day, I am 6 feet tall. My partner is 5'4". There are certain things I do around the house and just assume she can do, which is not true, right? There are certain things where I'm like, oh yeah, I guess you can't reach that. Oh yeah, I thought that was easily accessible. It's not. Right?
and
I just utterly lose sight of that. And that's a very small difference, right? I don't think that I don't think I've ever done a good job of describing things to a party of players where I've got one person's a human and one person's a halfling. Like, I feel like I should be playing on that more. Oh no, you're so small. You can't reach that. You're too small. You know, you got to jump up on the stool. It's almost one of those things, I think, that, like, you know, in fantasy settings in general, it's easy to forget about until you get it in film, right? When you get, like, Lord of the Rings showing up in film, suddenly there are all these delightful moments, like Gandalf bumping his head on the ceiling, the hobbits buying pints of beer and being excited about how much beer that is. Right? I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, that should probably come up a little more, I guess.
You know, I was just reading. So obviously, people here in New York are very excited about the NBA finals going on. And someone's pointing out, you're an NBA star. You're 6'9". You're 6'10". You tower over people commonly your whole life. And then you, for the first time, you meet, what is the Spurs star there, Wembanyama, right? And he's 7'5". And there's a guy towering over you for the first time in your life. And that must be kind of intimidating, probably, which is an interesting observation. I know, when I bump into the basketball players at UMaine in the cafeteria line, they are very large. And then at one point, it was late at night, there was a basketball players in the room next to me, and they got inebriated and they walked in the wrong room, namely mine, at night when I was trying to sleep, and one of them sat on me, and Jesus Christ, that guy was heavy.
Again, it comes in, I would say, the houses in New England that I live in, right? 6 foot is not inordinately tall. I'm used to often being on the taller side in a crowd, but it's not totally uncommon for me to meet someone who's taller than me. Nevertheless, these houses were built for short people. That just happens. When I was trying to buy a house, a regular test I would have to do is go into the bathroom and get into the shower and see, is the shower nozzle above my head or is it here?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Right? And then many times it was here. Yeah. And then can go, can that be fixed? Can I fix that? Because I don't want to take a shower with the nozzle hitting, you know, spring water on my chest. No thanks.
You're a couple inches taller than I am, but I've run into that at least once. And I was like, and I'm not used to running. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. Yeah. That and like the bathroom mirrors where I can't see my face. I'm like, this is not helpful. Who puts a mirror here like this? Why would you do that?
Sucks.
Yeah. Oh, right. Because you're only 5'6". Sure. Fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me throw out two, you know, and I mean, when I think environments, right, my first take is the Giants modules and, you know, just off the bat, the doors are big. So there ought to be, you know, just the very first thing is there ought to be a strength penalty, just like swing the damn door open. And hopefully I remember about that. When we did our design dash with the Scarlet Stockade adventure, which we made, I think that was the RPG Con adventure, if I recall, of this year. You know, the monsters were giants, and they had a giant Hydra, and we threw in the giant mummies in the front door. And so the first thing that I thought is, well, all the spaces have to be bigger. So we zoomed up the Dyson map and said it's every square is now 20 feet. And I'll say I'm slightly sensitive to this because I've screwed up in the past and I've had players rightfully critique that I had a bunch of giant, you know, Martian white apes running around in an area with tiny 5-foot tunnels. And they went, I don't think they can fit. And I'm like, oops. Right. Okay. I totally screwed that up. So I'm sensitive and I wanted to scale the Scarlet Stockade appropriately. And the very first thing I thought is it's more difficult to open the doors.
Okay. I don't remember that coming up. So, and I'm glad you brought this up. And this is maybe a little too behind the scenes, but like that's an open note I have on that dungeon design dash where I'm like, really? 20-foot squares? That's going to throw me. I'm never going to remember that. That aside, and unless, right, I'm just like, but the funny thing is what that does for me immediately is goes, you know what? 10-foot squares are weird, man. And then, how do we get stuck with this? Because honestly, right, this goes all the way back to like one of our earliest ever videos. You did a video, right, where you talked about like the size of doors.
Yeah. And, yes.
You know, if we're doing each square is 10 feet and you're trying to describe to the players, okay, you're going down this dungeon passageway. How big is it? Well, the tunnels are about 10 feet wide. That's a massively wide tunnel. That's a huge hallway. That's enormous.
It is. Right. It is. For any real world architecture. Yeah. That's like a cathedral, basically. Yeah.
Why?
It's true.
We should be scaling all our shit down.
It is. It is awkward. I mean, on the one hand, it's awkward, you know, when I look at classic adventures that are all 10-foot per square. I don't want to do a lot of conversion. It gives some strategic options, right? It gives them some strategic options, the players. So, and it's the classic thing, like a real world fortress is built specifically to funnel people in one at a time so the defenders can gang up on you. And our mythic underworld is set up to give the players some interesting strategic choices of maybe two or three people at the front. You can swap people around. You get some options. And it's almost tailor-made to be badly defended in order to make it give some kind of productivity to the player characters, actually. So it is this weird compromise.
It's one of those things where I think, like, just this is a terrible thing that we've inherited due to A, graph paper, and B, we live in the United States, right? Couldn't we have just gone with, like, 1 meter per square? Or wouldn't that have been better?
Well, two works pretty well. That's what I do in Star Frontiers.
2 meters. 2 meters per square. Right.
Part of me wants to call it one pace. Wants to call 5 feet one pace, like Roman style. Works pretty well.
But it's still pretty big, right? Even when you're on a battle mat and you're saying each square is 5 feet. I think we've seen countless videos of this on YouTube. That's still really a huge amount of space for one person.
You have quite a bit of space
in combat.
Melee fight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me throw out. Okay, so I got two other problems before we run out of time that I really want to throw out. And I feel like the more intriguing one is when you grow or shrink, do you keep your equipment and your clothing, or do you lose your equipment and your clothing? And just as one example, like you look in AD&D, right? The AD&D DM's guide says different things in different places. So if it adds a detail to the potions of growth and diminution, it says you keep your equipment and your stuff. And then it has a note, the DM's guide has a note for enlarge or reduce that says you lose them. And specifically, if you grow, all your clothes split and all the straps burst off your armor. You don't see this in the player's handbook, terrible. Right? You're not going to know about this fact in the player's handbook, but if you cast grow per the DM's guide a year later, right, you lose all your stuff and you stand there stark naked.
But then, why does the enlarge spell go on and on about how a plus one sword remains plus one and a staff-sized wand is still just a wand? And
well, what if you? I mean, that's why you have different rules for objects versus creatures, Paul. So I cast my growth on my wand of fireballs, and now I've got a giant fireballs, and shouldn't I have more charges, DM? Shouldn't I have that? That makes sense, right? Let me throw out one. Now, for the lot of this
the
stuff,
fireball itself, like, well, of course, and this is the era of volumetric fireball, right? So it should be right. This is right down to the question of like if we shrink down to mouse size, and someone's coming at me with a broom, and I cast fireball on them, what the hell happens, Dan? Is it? Do I fill the room? Does the whole room become a blazing inferno, or does it just a little pop?
Well, like I say, little pop. So for me, my choice in Get Shorty is little is and look again. You know, so are we?
And I should be able to enlarge my wand of magic missiles and create, you know, city destroying fireballs.
That's why. Okay, now Gary at least saw that we needed to prohibit that. So you know, so. You got to admit, right? So you got to admit that this breaks real physics, right? There's no way around it. Just off the face of it, a 12-foot tall humanoid would not work in reality, right? They would not have the physical status. Oh, so the whole idea is physics breaking, and as a result, I tend to want to look at fantasy literature. Like somebody thought about for this kind of magic what thematically works. So one place that I like to look back is Lieber's Swords of Lankmar, right? 1968 novella, I guess. And in that, and this is what inspired my Get Shorty adventure. I'm totally just ripping off Lieber's Swords of Lankmar. Is the Grey Mouser drinks a potion that he's given by Shilba, and it shrinks him down to mouse size. It shrinks him down to about 6 inches, and that allows him to infiltrate this undercity of anthropomorphic mice, which are under Lankmar and have plots to steal all the grain and destroy Lankmar, frankly. And he gets into all kinds of scurrilous trouble when he's down there, and there's fetching mouse, anthropomorphic mouse princesses that he woos and all this kind of stuff. And what happens there is that he drinks the potion. He doesn't know what it's going to do. So first of all, he's surprised at what's happening because he thinks he's going to get superpowers, and it's the opposite. And what happens is he shrinks himself, okay? He keeps his equipment, but what happens is that he is physically shedding his body mass and material from his equipment, and he winds up standing ankle deep in a giant pink puddle of thrown-off flesh liquid and gray dust from the material of his swords and his cloak and his armor and stuff like that. And he has to wade... But he has to wade out of this giant pit puddle of his own flesh and cellular matter in order to get in the Undercity, right? So,
it's been a while. I'm sure I've read this, and yet I'm being surprised. I don't know how that works. I'm sure I've read it.
Yeah.
What's the inverse? What happens at the end? Does he have to like find the goo to reclaim it, or
exactly, he has to find his own goo back in order to get, if I recall correctly,
that's foul. Yeah,
but I think magically keeping your stuff is not, I kind of don't want to deal with my naked giants and all this kind of, you know, once is funny, but then you're going to have to do this on a repetitive basis, and they're going to like, I want to cart around giant armor and dotted all this garbage. So I think the thing I want to embrace there from Libra is you get to keep your stuff. It's fine.
Yeah. I agree with that. Though it does open this whole bag of problems of, you know, what does it mean to have a shrunken or expanded, you know, magic item of this, that, or the other type? Like, so many questions are coming up now. Like, honestly, I feel like every time we try to get physics involved too much in our magic, this is like the same reason I'm not a fan of infravision. Like, it's too, you're getting too much science in my magic, and I just want to say, magic eyes, you got magic eyes that can see in the dark, don't worry about it, right? Like, I want to start the hand wave, because it's too much. It's like, this is the same way we go down the road of, like, dragons can't possibly. It's just not physically possible.
I have, because dragons is generally not an argument that I would want to use, I have never had these problems with infravision. So I find it to be clarifying and helpfully explanatory, and I've never run into a problem with it.
Well, we disagree on that.
Oh, look at our prior episode, friends. Look at our prior episode. Yeah. We spent an hour dueling over that.
Have you dealt with, though, the argument of, like, it's not physically possible for a creature the size of a dragon to fly? And then do you try to explain that with science, or do you just go, they're dragons, don't worry about it, they can fly?
It has not come up. Again, I think that, like we said, I think last time, there's a lot of stuff that's perfectly fine if the players don't have access to it. So there's a lot of mysterious... Mm. Supernatural, unexpected stuff in the world on the DM side, that's perfectly fine. The real problem is when you try to give it to the players and interact with all their normal stuff. Right. And again, in the standard hero's journey, right, you start in a mundane world, and I want to kind of dial in the mundane world, and then you travel to a supernatural world and hopefully return. And that supernatural world can work under different rules than your mundane world.
Really, though, it is in the player's realm, though, the moment I polymorph into a dragon.
Well, I guess that's a good point. That's a reasonable point. I have not tried.
Now I'm trying to remember. Now, because I think the polymorph rules have some odd things about this, right? Am I allowed to fly as a polymorph dragon or not?
I think travel is canonically always allowed in every edition. Yeah.
Okay, you said you were two problems you wanted to get in before we run out of time. Have we hit them both, or did... Yeah.
Can you use a bigger weapon? So if a giant drops their giant sword, can you use their giant sword? And this is partly on my mind because 3rd edition D&D really grappled with this to the extent that they have different, totally different systems in 3.0 versus 3.5 for scaling weapons. And to make a longer story short, 3rd edition was basically you can grab a larger weapon, use it two-handed, end of story. And somebody said, but the hilt width doesn't match up with the same scale as what you'd use for a Zweihander. And so 3.5 had a completely different system. Every weapon has an implied size scale to the creature that's using it. And then if you try to use something bigger or smaller, there's a -2 adjustment for each size difference between you and the original creature. I don't think I need that. I could be crazy, but I don't think I need that.
It definitely is a weird gray area, though, because then, like, I mean, my immediate reaction is like, well, why? Why do you want the giant sword? And probably the answer is the person saying, well, it'll do more damage, right? It'll do more damage. Is that a property of the sword or a property of the wielder? If I as a halfling
hold a
longsword two-handed, is it the same damage or a different damage from a two-handed sword wielded by a human?
This is a surprisingly sticky problem that I come back to over and over again. If I think about a giant sword, how much of the damage is because of the sword's weight versus the strength of the giant versus the leverage of the giant, the way that they're swinging it, I guess? And that's a surprisingly sticky problem. But I will say that in my OED house rules, I kind of don't want to get into that problem. So for me, a hobbit can pick up a normal person's one-handed sword. You get to use it two-handed. I'm not bringing in a bunch of math to complicate that. If Frodo could use an elven dagger as a short sword. Good enough for me. That's fine.
Right. I think this is the why I was liking the idea of, I can't remember, I wrote a blog post about this at some point about the size limitation of, let's just ignore dwarves for the moment. Let's just say halflings, although I was talking about dwarves as well. But let's just say halflings, that a halfling using a normal sword is going to wield it like a two-handed sword, and a halfling wielding a short sword is wielding it as a long sword, as a one-handed, whatever. Mm-hmm. My point being, though, that I liked that it was still stuck at the die type of that weapon. So a one-handed bladed weapon for a halfling is a short sword, and it only does D6. Sorry, you want to do D8, you're going to have to grab a long sword and wield it two-handed.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So I like that. That's what I do. In this case, the damage is associated with the weapon, not the wielder.
Right. Right. And 3.5, they had to have this complicated chart of every weapon has a tenfold columns for all the different sizes that to match up with it. And I agree that it, and the thing is, at least for me, it's not a game balance issue, because my hobbits probably want to rely on the range weapons anyway. So they're walking around mostly wanting to use short bows or slings. They're still super dangerous as a result.
The inverse of this logic then is, if I use a potion of growth to become 12 feet tall and I get to keep my sword and it grows with me, it should do more damage now.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much?
If you go back to original D&D, the main thing about giants is they just do double damage. So normal people all do 1d6, and your giants, they're giants, they do 2d6. So fundamentally, that's what I think the intent of a growth potion or a girdle of giant strength is, you get to use two dice. So at least as a starting stab at it.
But they very much want, both by the language and enlarge and the language and the magic items, they want a half step in between those, which is ogre, right? An ogre. Yes. More powerful than a human, but less powerful than a giant. Mm-hmm. So now I got to add a half a die?
Correct.
Okay.
Which in the D6 system is a +2. If you've got D8 basis for everything, then you could call that +4. Or 3.
Yeah.
Or 2.5. Or 2.25.
Is that what Gauntlets of Ogre Strength do in OD&D? Do they give me +2 damage to everything?
I believe that's correct. Let me look up here. I think as
you scroll through OD&D, what you're going to find is, it didn't really sell you.
That's very possible.
These are questions that I've definitely had, I think, every time it comes up. I'm like,
these gauntlets give the wearer the ability to strike as an ogre and generally give his hands and arms the strength of an ogre. They do not increase hit probability. I think the implication is that the implication would be the damage would be 1d6 +2.
And is that what an ogre does? If I look up the stats of an ogre in OD&D, does it do 1d6 +2? Okay. That's at least reasonable. But then, and that's where we start to then get in this weird space of like, well, therefore, does getting bigger equate to more points of strength? And is the strength spell and the large spell kind of doing the same thing, sort of? I don't know.
I will refer the interested viewer to the article Supersize Me in Fight On number 8, where the answer to that is, in fact, yes, and the numbers are laid out for you if you so wish to use
Excellent.
That
ruling. Excellent. Yep. Excellent. Well, Dan, we are out of time.
I will come back to this again. I'm telling you, people, I'm going to come back to this again because it's not over. I keep coming back to this and reminding myself. Such an interesting
subject. Or today,
subject.
At least. Any final thoughts on growing and shrinking and dealing with size difference in D&D?
I think it was Kilroy, viewer Kilroy at the start, that said, everybody in the world can relate to this because we were all kids at one point. We all have this sense memory of people towering over us, right, in the world, and then, having that shift on us across our lives. So apparently I've relearned today that I keep coming back to this as a really interesting point of excitement and interest and kind of changing things. And it is interesting the two possible ways that you use this is the whole party gets shrunk down, thrown into a world where you just say everything works with normal D&D mechanics. If you are throwing one person at a time with one of these magics, I do think it bears to think out the mechanics here you're going to use in advance. Because as you pointed out, Paul, they are very vaguely implied in original D&D. They were obviously very excited to have Alice's Drink Me potion in the game. Like, here it is. Didn't think through the various kind of complications. So you ought to think what you're going to do about it in advance. And I think that will bear fruit.
Yeah. Interesting. Viewers, if you have thoughts on how to handle growth or shrinking or just imparting a sense of scale to your party, Dan, you mentioned it comes up, you know, that we've all dealt with it, you know, because we were all children once. If you just live with someone who is not the same size as you, you may encounter this on a daily basis. Draw on that, I would say. Like, let's, you know, incorporate that in your descriptive text when you can. And then just really annoy the crap out of your halfling players.
Sorry. And then make thoughts. A door that only hobbits can get through in order to balance that out. Yeah,
that is, in fact, the delightful part of it. Absolutely. Here's if you have thoughts on how to incorporate this into your games. Please leave us a comment here in the YouTube video. We'd love to hear from you, and perhaps we will have more to say on this topic in a future episode.
Definitely. And remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, Loops, GitHub. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please look for us there and tombify that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can find the files on our website at wanderingdms.com. You can also find our podcast on various carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to us on one of those sites right now and it gives the ability to do so, please consider giving us a 5-star review. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And as Paul said at the top of the hour, every tier gets you access to our private Discord server, where the best patrons in all the land are conversing about these very issues 24/7, around the clock, and just so many interesting options. When I have questions, I go there and say, what did people think about this before I make a horrible mistake? Because probably someone has tried this and has better experience than I do on any particular subject. So we hope that you can join us there. Next week, we have planned a very special guest, one of our favorite people to have on, Mr. Matt Fitch from Mythmere Games. We're going to talk about his next upcoming product, and we love every time we can get Matt on, so we're very much looking forward to that. Maybe we can get Susie, the number two from Mythmere Games, because we love her too. We'll see if that happens or not, and that's going to be June 14th when Mythmere Games is back here, and we hope you can join here in 1 week. Don't forget, we are, and we're gonna, and did I mention the after chat? Have I forgotten to mention the after chat, Paul? Did I just do that?
clearly not, because we're talking about it now.
So in about 10 minutes, like Paul said, we will be on our live video after chat on our Discord server. So there's a couple of things I think we were enticed to say about, for example, Familiar Tower that we didn't want to say in public. And a couple other ideas, and we want to hear your ideas if we miss them in the chat today as well. So I hope you'll join us in the live video after chat on our Discord server in about 10 minutes now. And of course, don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.